Starless Night, Chapter 16, Menzo Baranzan. The raft slid slowly across Donegarden, the small, dark lake on the eastern end of the great cavern that housed Menzo Baranzan. Drizzt sat on the prow of the craft, looking west as the cavern opened wide before him, though with his infravision the image seemed strangely blurred. Drizzt initially attributed it to the lake's warm currents and gave it little thought. He was preoccupied, his mind looking as much in the past as in the present, reeling with stirring memories. The rhythmic moaning of the organ paddlers behind him allowed him to find a calmness to flow his memories one at a time. The Drow Ranger closed his eyes and willed the shift from heat-sensing infravision into the normal spectrum of light. He remembered the splendor of Menzo Baranzan's stalagmite and stalactite structures, their intricate and crafted designs highlighted by glowing fairy fire of purple, blue, and red. He wasn't prepared for what he found when he opened his eyes. The city was filled with light, not just with fairy fires, but with sparkling dots of yellow and white, the light of torches and bright magical enchantments. For a very brief moment, Drizzt allowed himself to believe that the presence of light might be some remote indication of a changing of the Dark Elves' dark ways. He'd always connected the perpetual gloom of the Underdark to the dark demeanor of Drow, or, at least, had thought that the darkness a fitting result of his kin's dark ways. Why the lights? Drizzt was not arrogant enough to think that their presence might be somehow connected to the hunt for him. He did not think that he was that important to the Drow, and had little more than the deep gnome's supposition that things were awry. He had no idea that plans were being laid out for an all-out surface raid. He wanted to question one of the other Drow on the matter. The female, in particular, would likely have some information. But how could he broach the subject without giving away his identity as an outsider? As if on cue, the female was at his side, sitting uncomfortably close. "The days are long on the Isle of Rothe," she said coyly, obvious attraction reflected in her red glowing eyes. "I will never get used to the light," Drizzt replied, changing the subject and looking back toward the city. He kept his eyes operating in the normal spectrum in hope that his leading statements might prompt some conversation in the matter. "It stings my eyes." "Of course it does," the female purred, moving closer, even putting a hand inside Driz's elbow. "But you will get used to it in time." In time? In time for what? Driz wanted to ask, for he suspected from her tone that she was referring to some specific event. He had no idea of how to begin the question, though, and as the female moved even closer, he found that he had more pressing problems. In Drow culture, males were subservient, and to refuse the advances of a female could invite serious trouble. "I am Carissa," she whispered in his ear. "Tell me that you wish to be my slave." Drizzt jumped up suddenly and snapped his scimitars from their sheaths. He turned away from Carissa, focused his attention on the lake to make sure that she understood he meant no threat against her. "What is it?" the surprised female demanded. "A movement in the water," Drizzt lied. "A subtle undercurrent, as though something large just passed under our craft." Carissa scowled but stood, and peered into the gloomy lake. It was common knowledge in Menzo Baranzan that dark things resided under the usually still waters of Donegarden. One of the games the slavers played was to make the goblins and orcs swim from the isle to the shore, to see if any of them would be pulled down to terrible deaths. A few moments passed quietly, the only sound the continual moaning chants of the orcs lining the sides of the craft. A third drow joined Drizzt and Carissa on the prow, eyeing Drizzt's blue flaring scimitar. "You mark us for every enemy in the area." His hands flashed in the silent code. Drizzt slid the scimitars away and let his eyes drift back into infravision. "If our enemies are beneath the waters, then the motion of our craft marks us more than any light," his hands answered.
"There are no enemies," Carissa added, motioning for the third drow to go back to his station.
When he left, she turned a lewd look upon Drizzt.
a warrior? She asked, carefully regarding the purple-eyed male. A patrol leader, perhaps? Driz nodded, and it was no lie. He had been a patrol leader.
Good, Carissa remarked. I like males who are worth the trouble.
She looked up then, took note that they were fast approaching the Isle of Rothe.
We will speak later, perhaps.
Then she turned and swept away, brushing her hands behind her so that her robes rode high on her shapely legs. Drizzt winced as though slapped. The last thing Carissa had on her mind was speaking. He couldn't deny that she was beautiful, with sculpted features, a thick mane of well-groomed hair, and a finely toned body. But in his years among the drow, Drizzt Duarden had learned to look beyond physical beauty and physical attraction. Drizzt did not separate the physical from the emotional. He was a superb fighter because he fought with his heart and would no sooner battle merely for the sake of a battle than he would mate for the sake of the physical act.
Later,
Carissa said once more, glancing back over her delicate, perfectly squared shoulder. When worms eat your bones, Driz whispered through a phony smile. For some reason, he thought of Catterbury then, and the warmth of that image pushed away the chill of this hungry, drow female. Blindenstone charmed Catterbury, despite her obvious predicament and the fact that the Shrefnebli did not treat her as a long-lost friend. Stripped of her weapons, armor, jewelry, and even her boots, she was taken into the city in just her basic clothes. The gnome escorts did not abuse her, but neither were they gentle. They tightly clasped her arm at the elbow and hoisted her and pulled her around the narrow, rocky ways of the city's defensible anterooms. When they had taken the circlet from the woman's head, the gnomes had easily come to guess its function. And as soon as the anterooms were passed, they gave the precious item back to Catterbury. Drizzt had told her of this place, of the deep gnome's natural blending with their environment, but she had never pictured that the drow's words would ring so true. Dwarves were miners, the best in all the world, but the deep gnomes went beyond that description. They were part of the rock, it seemed, burrowing creatures wholly at one with the stone. Their houses could have been the randomly tumbled boulders of a long-past volcanic eruption, their corridors the winding ways of an ancient river. 100 sets of eyes followed Catterbury's every step as she was led across the city proper. She realized that she was probably the first human the Shrefnebli had ever seen, and she did not mind the attention, for she was no less enchanted by the Shrefnebli. Their features, seeming so gray and dour out in the wild tunnels, appeared softer now, gentler. She wondered what a smile would look like on the face of a Shrefneblin, and she wanted to see it. These were Driz's friends, she kept reminding herself, and she took comfort in the drow ranger's judgment. She was brought into a small, round room. A guard motioned for her to sit in one of 3 stone chairs. Catterbury did so hesitantly, for she recalled a tale that Driz had told her of a Shrefneblin chair that had magically shackled him and held him fast. No such thing happened now, though, and a moment later, a very unusual deep gnome entered the room, dangling the magical locket with Driz's picture from the end of a hand that was crafted into a mithril pickaxe.
Belwar, Catterbury stated,
for there could be no 2 gnomes who so perfectly fit Driz's description of his dear Shrefneblin friend. The most honored borough warden stopped in his tracks and eyed the woman suspiciously, obviously caught off guard by her recognition.
Drizzt, Belwar, Catterbury said again,
wrapping her arms about her as though hugging someone. She pointed to herself and said,
Catterbury. Drizzt,
and repeated the motion. They could not speak 2 words of each other's language, but in a short time, using hand and body language, Catterbury had won over the borough warden, had even explained to him that she was searching for Drizzt. She did not like the grave face Belwar wore at that remark and his explanation. A single common name, the name of the drow city, was not reassuring. Drizzt had gone into Menzo Baranzan. She was given a meal of cooked mushrooms and other plant-like growths that she did not recognize. Then she was given back her items, including the locket and the onyx panther, but not the magical mask. She then was left alone, for hours it seemed, sitting in the starlit darkness, silently blessing Elustrial for her precious gift, and thinking how perfectly miserable the trek would have been without the cat's eye. She would not even have seen Belwar to recognize him. Her thoughts were still on Belwar when he at last returned, along with two other gnomes, wearing long, soft robes, very unlike the rough, leather-like, metal-plated outfits typical of the race. Catterby figured that these two must be important, perhaps counselors.
"Furbel," Belwar explained, pointing to one of the Svirfnebli, one that did not look happy.
Catterby figured out why a moment later, when Belwar pointed to her, then to Furbel, then to the door and spoke a long sentence, the only word of which Catterby caught was Menzoberranzan. Furbel motioned for her to follow him, apparently anxious to be on their way, and Catterby, though she would have loved to stay in Blingdenstone and learn more about the intriguing Svirfnebli, thoroughly agreed. Drizzt was too far ahead of her already. She rose from the chair and started out, but was caught at the arm by Belwar's pickaxe hand and turned about to face the Burrow Warden. He pulled the magical mask from his belt and lifted it to her.
"Drizzt,"
he said, pointing his hammer hand at her face.
"Drizzt."
Catterby nodded, understanding that the Burrow Warden thought it would be wise of her to walk as a drow. She turned to leave, but, on a sudden impulse, turned back and gave Belwar a peck on the cheek. Smiling appreciatively, the young woman walked from the house and, with Furbel leading the way, strode from Blingdenstone.
"How did you get Furbel to agree to take her into the Drow City?"
the remaining gnome counselor asked the Burrow Warden when they were alone.
"Beavrip!"
Belwar bellowed. He clapped his mithril hands together, and immediately sparks and arcing lines of energy ran along his crafted hands. He put a wry look on the counselor, who merely laughed in a squeaky Svirfneblin way. Poor Furbel. Drizzt was glad to escort a group of orcs from the isle back to the mainland, if only so that he could avoid the eager Carissa. She watched him go from the shore. Her expression caught somewhere between a pout and anticipation, as if to say that Drizzt might have escaped, but only for now. With the isle behind him, Drizzt put all thoughts of Carissa from his mind. His task and dangers lay ahead in the city proper, and he honestly did not know where he would begin looking for answers. He feared that it would all come down to his surrender, that he would have to give himself over to protect the friends that he had left behind. He thought of Zach Nefane, his father and friend, who had been sacrificed to the evil Spider Queen in his stead. He thought of Wulfgar, his lost friend, and memories of the young barbarian strengthened Drizzt's resolve. He offered no explanation to the surprised slavers awaiting the craft on the beach. His expression alone told them not to question him as he walked past their encampment, away from Donegarden. Soon he moved easily, warily, along the winding ways of Menzoberranzan. He passed close by several dark elves under the more than curious eyes of dozens of house guards standing watch from their parapets along the sides of hollowed stalactites. Drizzt carried with him an irrational notion that he might be recognized, and had to tell himself many times that he had been out of Menzoberranzan for more than 30 years, that Drizzt Duarden, even House Duarden, was now part of Menzoberranzan's history. But if that were true, why was he here, in this place where he did not want to be? Drizzt wished that he had a piwafwi, the black cloak typical of drow outerwear. His forest green cloak, thick and warm, was more suited to the environs of the surface world and might connect him, in the eyes of onlookers, to that rarely seen place. He kept the hood up and the cowl low and pushed on. This would be one of many excursions into the city proper, he believed, and he familiarized himself once more with the winding avenues and the dark ways. The flicker of light around a bend surprised him, stung his heat-seeing eyes, and he moved tightly against the wall of a stalagmite, one hand under his cloak, grasping Twinkle's hilt. A group of 4 drow males came around the bend, talking easily, paying Drizzt no heed. They wore the symbol of House Benray, Drizzt noted as his vision shifted back to the normal spectrum, and one of them carried a torch. Little that Drizzt had witnessed in all his life seemed so out of place to him. Why? He asked himself repeatedly, and he felt that this was all somehow related to him. Were the drow preparing an offensive against some surface location? The notion rocked Drizzt to his core. House Benray soldiers carrying torches. getting their underdark eyes desensitized to the light. Dries did not know what to think. He would have to go back to the Isle of Rothe, he decided, and he figured that that out-of-the-way place was as good a base as any he could secure in the city. Perhaps he could get Carissa to tell him the meaning of the lights, so that the next excursion into the city proper might prove fruitful. He stalked back through the city, cowl low, thoughts inward, and did not notice the movements shadowing his own. Few in Nenzaburanton ever noticed the movements of Bregan D'Arth. Caterbury had never viewed anything so mysterious and wonderful, and, in the starlight of her vision, the glow of the stalagmite towers and hanging stalactites seemed more wonderful still. The fairy fires of Menzoberranzan highlighted 10,000 wondrous carvings, some of definite shape, mostly spiders, and others free-flowing forms, surrealistic and beautiful. She would like to come here under different circumstances, Caterbury decided. She would like to be an explorer that discovered an empty Menzoberranzan, that she might study and absorb the incredible drow workmanship and relics in safety. For, as overwhelmed as Caterbury was by the magnificence of the drow city, she was truly terrified. 20,000 drow, 20,000 deadly enemies were all about her. As proof against the fear, the young woman tightly clasped Elustriel's magical locket and thought of the picture therein, of Dris Duarden. He was here, somewhere close, she believed, and her suspicions were confirmed when the locket flared suddenly with warmth. Then it cooled. Caterbury moved methodically, turning back to the north, to the secret tunnels Ferbal had taken her through to get to this place. The locket remained cool. She shifted to her right and faced west, along the chasm near her, the Claw Rift it was called, and past the great sweeping steps that led to the higher level. Then she faced south, toward the highest and grandest section of all, judging from the elaborate glowing designs. Still, the locket remained cool. Then began to warm as the young woman continued to turn, looking past the nearest stalagmite mounds to the relatively clear section to the east. Drizzt was there, in the east. Caterbury took a deep breath, then another, to steady her nerves and muster the courage to come fully out of the protected tunnel. She looked to her hands again and her flowing robes and took comfort in the apparently perfect drow disguise. She wished that she had Gwenhyver beside her, remembered the moment in Silvery Moon when the panther had lopped down the streets beside her, but wasn't sure how the cat would be received in Menzoberranzan. The last thing she wanted to do was call attention to herself. She moved quickly and quietly, throwing the hood of her robes low over her head. She hunched as she walked and kept her grasp on the locket to guide her way and bolster her strength. She worked hard to avoid the stares of the many house sentries, and pointedly looked away whenever she saw a drow coming down the avenue toward her from the other direction. She was almost past the area of stalagmites, could see the moss bed, the mushroom grove, even the lake beyond, when two drow came out of the shadows suddenly, blocking the way, though their weapons remained sheathed. One of them asked her a question, which she, of course, did not understand. She subconsciously winced and noticed that they were looking at her eyes. Her eyes, of course. They were not glowing with infravision, as the deep gnomes had informed her. The male asked her a question again, somewhat more forcefully, then looked over his shoulder toward the moss bed and the lake. Caterbury suspected that these two were part of a patrol, and that they wanted to know what business she might have on this side of the city. She noted the courteous way they addressed her, and remembered things that Drizzt had taught her about drow culture. She was a female. They, only males. The undecipherable question came again, and Caterbury responded with an open snarl. One of the males dropped his hands to the hilts of his twin swords, but Caterbury pointed at them and snarled again, viciously. The two males looked to each other in obvious confusion. By their estimation, this female was blind, or at least was not using infravision, and the lights in the city were not that bright. She should not have been able to see the movement clearly, and yet, by her pointing finger, she obviously had. Caterbury growled at them and waved them away, and to her surprise and profound relief, the males backed off, eyeing her suspiciously, but making no moves against her. She started to hunch over, thinking to hide again under her cowl, but changed her mind instead. This was Menzoberranzan, full of brash dark elves, full of intrigue, a place where knowing, even pretending to know, something your rival did not know could keep you alive. Catterby threw off the hood and stood straight, shaking her head as her thick hair freed itself of the folds. She stared at the two males wickedly and began to laugh. They ran off. The young woman nearly toppled with relief. She took another deep breath, clasped the locket in her clenched fist, and headed toward the lake.